Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening, and welcome to For Men About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your co-host of this weekly journey through all things fermented.
You are currently listening to the music of Chris Berry. I had the pleasure of going on tour with Chris several times and being in his band for a number of years toward the country. He is actually in town and doing a really wonderful storytelling event on February 21st and 22nd at BAM, Brooklyn Academy of Music. I'm really looking forward to it. But unfortunately, I won't be able to go on the 21st because I'll be at the opening party for New York City Beer Week. And if you are around in New York City, please come to that. We're having a giant party at Grand Central Terminal in Vanderbilt Hall. It's put on by the New York City Brewers Guild. Go check out nycbeerweek.com for more information and for tickets. We're really excited about that entire week, New York City Beer Week, from February 21st to March 2nd.
Also, this Saturday is the New York City Homebrewers Guild is putting on Homebrew Alley.
It's too late to register entries, but we might need some more volunteers, so go to homebrewalley.com to sign up to volunteer, or just come to Alewife in Queens. Alewife is an amazing beer bar. Patrick Doniger and Roz Doniger and Dan Lanigan do a wonderful job over there and are really gracious hosts. We're going to have a giant party on Saturday the 8th. Around 7 o'clock, we'll be announcing winners and hanging the night through, and there may be some extra homebrew to taste.
Yeah, definitely will be.
You may recall a few weeks back, a few moments for us, because Mary and I are actually out of the country right now as you listen to this, unless you're listening to the archive, which is archived on Stitcher and iTunes, by the way. We hung out with Tony Limuaco 2 weeks ago. Hi, Tony.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
Tony is from KimchiLicious.com and started a project, a cookbook, KimchiLicious, or sorry.
It's KimchiLicious.
KimchiLicious, American tapas.
Korean tapas for the American table.
Thank you. That's what I'm getting at. And then it launched you into a giant kimchi making thing, and now you're making kimchi at a commercial level for people around town.
Yes, I will be expanding into a facility in Long Island City this year. That's the big step up.
That's really exciting because your kimchi is awesome.
Oh, thank
really
you.
Delicious. One of the last things we talked about on the last show was, how long to keep kimchi in the refrigerator and whether oxygen was making a difference. We were just talking about how to make kimchi. If you don't know how to make kimchi, check out that episode. But what can go wrong?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of things. Like you were saying, the brine seemed to run out. That's evaporation. A lot of it is just not leaving the lid tight enough. And also it could be the quality of the cabbage, like not having as much water in it. But oxygen is the thief of all flavor. So one thing to do is a quick fix is just make a quick salt brine. They call it a 10% brine by weight. So let's say to a half cup of, to a cup of water, maybe a teaspoon of salt. That is a 10% brine in rough estimate. Cover the top and make sure everything is submerged and plunge it back down again. So, let it sit again. So let it sit a while. I'd say for long-term storage, always make sure liquid has covered it.
Okay.
And that brine, that goes back to, actually, in the last episode, we didn't actually talk what brine was. You said add some brine to it, so that would be the brine that you would add if you were making it initially and didn't have enough liquid
to
coat.
You could just start a fresh brine. It really is just sea salt and water. Some people say purify the water. I don't think that matters that much. There's not much of a flavor sensation. I would say a lot of people fear fluoride. That's something to consider. But generally in New York, we have the best tap water in the United States.
Now, I know when we talk about home brewing across the country, again, New York City worked great. We don't even have, we have chlorine added, but it's even, I don't find it's an excess.
It's good water.
But I know parts of the country that have chloramine, which is not do those people probably need to use a filtered or water?
Yeah, I would say definitely yes. I live in Colorado. Well, on and off. In college, I went back with my roommate's parents to my roommate's parents' house in Fort Collins and, you know, slop the pig, chop the wood, take care of the farm, and their water is so hard. it destroys bread. Yeah, it's amazing how you have to do so many things. And also, another thing that I forgot about, oxygen levels. You can actually produce a better kimchi in a higher climate because you are not your oxygen level is low and the chances of oxidation are very low.
Mm-hmm. So
I did not think about that at
all. That's pretty interesting.
Well, sea level has a lot to do with food making. You know, it really is like barometric pressure, like sausages. You know, like a cured meat doesn't really happen well in higher climates. It really is like where the barometric pressure is heavier, you know, and like in the Mediterranean, you know.
Right. Yeah. So I have a question. What if somebody wants to make kimchi, but they can't find naba cabbage?
I
mean, I know in New York City we have tons of, you know, it's very easy to find lots of things. But I've lived in rural environments, suburban environments. What if you can't find naba cabbage?
I would say a quick close cousin is the Savoy cabbage.
Okay.
You know, and that seems pretty, you know, that's pretty available. You know, you just cannot use the garden variety, you know, cabbage. It's just too thick. The cell walls are too thick. It's a different flavor. Tends to get sour very easily.
Like sauerkraut.
Yeah, which is great for sauerkraut. But you want a lot more, for kimchi, you definitely want a lot more subtlety and depth and flavor.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say Savoy if you can't find a Napa cabbage.
Okay. And then what about other vegetables, like if you wanted to do radishes?
Oh, yeah. I would say I experimented that a lot. And a traditional type of Korean kimchi with radishes is called kaktugi. It's I don't want to spell it because I'm sure I'm going to get it wrong, but it's called kaktugi. And it is cubed Korean radish. That's a very unique radish. It's not daikon. Daikon actually tends to get more sour with age. That's a different food aesthetic. It's not a bad thing. I found European white radishes just got bitter. I did not like what I made. I hate throwing things out too, especially when you've waited like a whole 2 weeks and you have that anticipation that this is going to be great and you go, I think this goes right to the garbage. Compost. That did not do well. You want radishes that have a higher sugar content.
Okay.
And I think that is what's going to help you along.
So let me ask you this. Are there any kind of non-traditional kimchi ingredients that you've used or that you've primarily that you've had luck with? Like stuff that we would...
Oh, yeah. You know, there's a fresh type of fern kimchi. It's traditionally Korean. I use fiddleheads. Those are delicious. Oh, that's to be eaten within days because the flavor changes too quickly. So it's considered like a daily kimchi.
Mm-hmm.
I've also made Brussels sprouts kimchi. That was delicious.
Wow.
It takes a lot longer and you got to slice it thinner because, and also I the best result was parboiling them.
Okay.
Because that really softened up the structure.
Right, I was going to ask how long you would brine that for.
Parboiling helps a lot. I'm saying just, you know, blanch it, you know, 15 seconds, pull it out. Salt it while it's hot, and that'll help extract the liquid and break down the cell structure. Bok choy is one of my favorite ones, but it really dissolves too quickly. You don't want to salt this too much. It's it's almost like lettuce, but that makes a really nice sweet kimchi.
So last episode you talked about how, you know, you want to salt in your cabbage for an hour and a half max. So when you say bok choy, just very little, we're
I would say it's not a 10% brinish thing at all. It's lightly salted, let it sit for 20 minutes, and then continue because it is very
then full rinse, get off that salt.
Matter of fact, one of the first big mistakes I made was I salted cabbage, left for the day, and got locked out of my apartment. The cabbage dissolved. I was like, oh my God, this is like membrane. It was amazing how, you know, that was like a good 4-hour lockout until...
Wow.
Until I could get back in my apartment, and I was like, wow, it is just not usable.
And which, coming from a culture where you don't throw anything away, that one was time to throw away.
It just had no use. You know, a part of the Asian aesthetic is the slimy, actually. It is part of the Asian food aesthetic, but this was just too much for me.
Yeah.
I feel like when it gets to that point, you're taking on too much salt, too.
It's not reversible at that point.
Right.
Yeah. Same thing, too. Some people, for larger batches, to slow down the salting process, larger batches are brined overnight. 12 hours, 18 hours. So in addition to salting in large batches, brining does help in huge batches to texturize the cabbage.
Okay.
Even freeze drying?
No.
There's no saving it with the...
No, I don't think the Koreans have put that in space yet. Or maybe they have. Maybe they have, and I don't know it.
You
know?
I mean, I'm talking about the drying, jerky drying that you do for...
That works best with kimchi that has fully aged.
Fully
fermented,
yeah.
Meaning, we're talking about after 8 months, if you really don't want it.
Yeah.
Part of the waste not want our culture is dehydration. And actually, that's a very traditional thing from China on downward. Things are just dried and powdered. And I bought a really good dehydrator, I don't think anything else will ever go in there after dehydrating kimchi.
Yep. I could see fruit roll-ups following kimchi.
Actually,
sounds good to me for some reason.
Are you a slave to trends? I don't know about this kimchi fruit roll-up. that's definitely ways to fix it. Like we're on that topic. If you know that you cannot get to your cabbage after the initial salting, stick it in a brine and stick it in the fridge. Okay. You could keep it in there up to 24 hours. Some people say longer, but I think that actually changes the texture too much.
Mm-hmm.
Another way, in fermentation, let's say it's a hot summer day. One traditional way to slow down the fermentation is just quickly cooling it, aside from the refrigeration thing. Let's say that you're doing a huge batch. Let's say you're doing 40 pounds. If that in 2 days turns really quickly in a hot summer day, stick it in the fridge.
Okay.
In a commercial setting, a refrigeration unit. The reason why is it's in that mass, it's hard to slow down. So it's not like making your little brew of mason jar.
Because it's producing its own temperature.
It's producing its own temperature.
Its own heat. Yeah.
Yeah, so the quick thing is and it can turn on a summer's day. A whole batch can turn in a day. Mm-hmm. So, right into the walk-in fridge.
Yeah, so that's a good question. I actually was wondering about this a little while ago. What is the ideal temperature? So Chris and I live in this loft. It's 50 degrees in the winter. And, part of the apartment. And then it's, extremely hot in the summer. So what are the ideal temperatures for kimchi? You don't want to go below or above this.
I know. That's always a funny thing, is all instructions say at room temperature.
Right.
Where?
My
Mars?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
On Neptune, do not leave it.
Yeah.
Well, I would say ideally for the first fermentation, which is room temperature, you want it to be somewhere between... I would say 65 to no higher than 78.
Mm-hmm.
Anything higher, it's hard to slow down that accelerated fermentation.
That's when you can get kind of off flavors.
Yeah,
or just...
It's not producing the right flavors. It's mm-hmm. just creating sour without mm-hmm. any character. I would say that's about right.
And that's the room, not...
Keep a thermometer in there and take a look at it. That gives you a good reading. In a commercial setting, it's expected that these are the common temperatures in a commercial facility. Second fermentation, you do around 41 degrees. A Board of Health, 41 degrees and below. So don't get any lower than, I would say, 36. Freezing is 33. Once it freezes, it destroys, it destroys vegetable matter.
Right.
It also kills the bacteria, and the mm-hmm. bacteria is something you want to sustain. The bacteria itself is pretty durable. Think of it this way. It is something in your body and deals with the conditions of your body. Going above your body temperature, like when I dehydrate the stuff, I want to keep as much of the probiotics in there because it is, it's good for you.
Mm-hmm.
I dehydrate at 105 degrees for 30 hours.
So you're going kind of low and slow method.
Low and
of
slow.
Dehydration.
Yeah, it's like, I'm sure they could do this in Las Vegas by just leaving it on the
roof. I like cooking eggs on rocks.
Yeah, because that's true. So if somebody is trying to ferment in a temperature that's below, 63, 65, they would want to do something to kind of insulate or... bring it up.
And you try to emulate, kimchi was traditionally, kimchi was made in the fall after the harvest, and you made enough of that to last you through the winter. So you're emulating the fall temperatures.
Okay.
You know, and then the winter temperatures after burying.
Right.
And luckily, we don't have to bury them. Can you imagine burying something in Brooklyn?
No.
Yeah, you get like car door, battery, dead body, brick.
Yeah, next to your kimchi. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And on that note, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back on Cooking with Kimchi with Tony from KimchiLicious.com.
The Man About It.
Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years, so it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Welcome back to Foment About It.
If you'll notice, Chris, we're both chewing on kimchi waffles, which Tony delicious. Brought us to the studio. Yeah, they're absolutely phenomenal.
Buttermilk kimchi waffles made with cornmeal.
All right, so kimchi waffles. So what has inspired you to work on this book?
A lot of kimchi is really one of my favorite foods. And I would say, especially growing up on Guam, it was one of those things you had. You can get there was kimchi pizza on Guam before it became a fad. You go to the local Shakey's and you want extra kimchi. They charge you $1 and you have kimchi pizza. It was one of our favorite things to do with, go to the farmer's market for lunch. Shh, you're skipping school. And you could have kimchi, a kimchi bowl, you know, or anything with kimchi. It's one of those funny things that it's just a flavor that I grew up with that I really cherish.
Mm-hmm.
But it also turned into, what else do I do with it? It became a challenge. The concept really was, you know, I've made a kimchi meatloaf. I've made, you know, kimchi pulled pork. You know, anything that I could put it in, I would try to. And some things didn't always work out.
Yeah, that's what I want to know about. What's a good kimchi failure? Something you thought would work and you were like, whoa.
Well, let's see. Oh, there's so many. stuffed kimchi burgers, not so good. It turned out that the acid level on the inside, I took two patties, put kimchi with different stuffing and cheese, sealed them together, and threw them on the grill. It's such an acid level that the inside turns bitter. So it wasn't what I thought.
Yep.
Kimchi, to get the full flavor, is best eaten, as a side dish or on top, I think. But when you cook with it, it does take on different characteristics. One is you primarily get the sour, especially if you're cooking with older kimchi, and the finer aged kimchis are what you want to cook with. You know, it breaks down so easily. I found that when you cook with it, you work with, like what you're having here, the kimchi salsa, it's already sour. There's not much you add to it. It's really just, apple, garlic, lime, and little sugar for balance. But otherwise,
this kimchi salsa is delicious.
That's it.
I mean, yeah.
It's
fantastic.
Out of this world. Listen, I'm trying to think of the worst thing that I made. I kept on revisiting it, but baked eggs. Okay, the first time I did it, the kimchi has enough sugar in it that it burned and stuck the egg to the bottom of the muffin pan. So I bought Stephanie a new pan. That's right. I didn't just clean it. I got new pan. Then the second time, what I did is I lined it with a wonton wrapper. Buttered up some wonton wrappers, made a nice little nest, and put the kimchi on top, but not at the bottom. So it's a technique of layering.
Right.
But those were really good baked eggs.
And because again, you're putting the kimchi on top, so they're not, and that's not a dish that you have to cook very long.
Not very long, you know. You put it on towards the end. A lot of the cooking that I do, I always think of it as Italian cooking. You don't throw it in all together. Some things just go on at the end,
mm-hmm.
like in a good marinara, shrimp marinara. The shrimp, you take it off the stove and you throw the shrimp in. You don't cook it.
You just
let it do its thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that is how kimchi works pretty well with most cooking. Otherwise, the kimchi pulled pork that I did, my friend Pat and I have been doing the barbecue at Freddy's Bar now 8 years, and people don't know it, but they've been eating kimchi. but the pulled pork is a lot of the old kimchi. You know, it's now broken down. It's very tart. And in a lot of ways, it's like when you add vinegar or cider vinegar to it.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was
so
thinking.
So the sour is what you want. That's really the component of flavor, but it also has a lot of depth of all the processed garlic that's been through there. It's very fragrant. It has a deeper taste than the regular pulled pork. So that's another way of doing it. Another one is stews. I really like a hot and sour stew. I just do. Oh, here's a classic failure. I entered the chili contest at Freddy's and I made a vegan Kim chili. I didn't win. It was interesting and all the vegans liked it, but let's face it, they're vegans.
But you'd be focusing mostly on vegan style kimchi.
I'm not a vegan, but my kimchi is. A lot of it, again, is I cannot eat the regular fish sauces that are out there. A lot of them are consolidated, and I break out in a rash or asthma. Both are embarrassing.
Yeah. Sorry to hear that.
So I'm very guarded about eating shellfish. And I have to say, I had a piece of shrimp quesadilla from my friend Heather. I took Benadryl earlier for other things, and I survived it.
That's good.
I was, I had a little reunion with my family in Portland, and boy, did they love crab. I kept thinking, sooner or later, that EpiPen is going to come right out.
Yeah, that's always a terror. Now, is that true? That's true with oysters as well, right?
It seems hit or miss. It really is, and I don't know why. Talking with a lot of nutritionists, our breadbasket and the way we get food has changed so much.
Right.
So it's not that I'm a purist, but I try to subtract things that won't kill me.
Right, right.
Did you bring up oysters because some people make kimchi with oysters?
Oh, yeah. That is a premium way to have it. I don't think, I will say this crossing my fingers, I don't think I have an oyster reaction. But it does add such a depth to kimchi. It's a very classic way to have mock kimchi. It adds a sweetness that really nice, wonderful seaside flavor, but also it breaks down, so you're not really eating oyster. It really dissolves.
But go ahead.
I was going to ask at what point you make. So you gave us a mock recipe in the last show. Would you just throw an oyster in that at the time you put it into fermentation, or would you chop it up?
So you're chopping up a raw oyster.
Yeah, just chop it up really well, you know, into smaller components, and just mix it in at the end, you know, before you put it at room temperature. And that's, you know, I think it's a very classic way to have kimchi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know.
Freaks me out, man. I'll tell you that.
You don't like oysters?
I love oysters, but I don't know why.
I don't get it.
I've made oyster beaters, but
you don't even see
about,
them. Right. They've broken down into basic cells.
Right. Yeah, and I think the same thing. I mean, I think it's true because you think about a raw oyster sitting around. Like that's one of the worst things you can imagine is a bad raw oyster.
Yeah.
But if you think about it in the terms of ceviche, right? Because essentially fermentation is a type of cooking.
It is acidifying.
Right.
It is considered acidified food by the Board of Health.
And ceviche is the same way.
You're
cooking through, you know, with a non-heat process.
Yes.
So an acidification process, basically. So I think if you think about it that way,
I'm
we got to try that
I'm
next.
Ecuadorian. I love ceviche. I'm all about ceviche.
So what are some of the other things? I guess if people want to cook with, they want to incorporate kimchi into their some of the regular stuff that they eat that's not necessarily of Korean origin. What are some of the tips you have?
Oh,
besides, don't cook it too, add it at the end. Obviously, don't destroy the flavor.
Get a good blender.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah, salsa is kind of how.
Oh, the salsa, that's all hand chopped.
Okay.
I mean, that is, the style of kokjugi, the fermented Korean radish that I do, is bite size. It's not, the traditional one is like an inch by an inch cube. I make mine a half inch.
Okay.
And so it's just more, I think it's more American style. You know,
mm-hmm.
like we like our stuff minced. It's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
But other styles of, I lost track.
So get a good blender you can kind of
get
the flavor of kimchi down to add to other things.
Yeah,
that you're
I would say this. Get a good blender because it goes great in batter. I've made crepes. They're delicious. The kimchi waffles you're having there, it really is just adding pureeing kimchi into the buttermilk batter.
Mm-hmm.
And that really works out well. Actually, my fiance, we were on a show called, the working title, Monster Foods. And I didn't get on. She did. She made kimchi cupcakes. And you know what? They were delicious. It loses, in baking, loses all of the kimchi components. There's a slight chili flavor to it. And it's a basic carrot cake batter.
Right.
It just tasted like the most umami carrot cake. You know what I mean? It's on the level of like miso white chocolate.
Yep.
It was good.
That sounds really good. Okay, two questions about that. What kind of icing? Was there icing on it? Or a glaze?
It was a cream cheese.
Okay, cream cheese. Cream cheese glaze. That makes sense.
But the batter, I mean, and the cake itself, I had all the broken ones. It really, umami, we throw that term around. It actually is, they call it the fifth flavor.
Right.
Our tongues do perceive, I don't know, I always wonder if animals taste umami. You know?
That's a good question.
But, it's definitely a part of our tongue that perceives savory. So it is a factual thing. It is a chemical reaction. Umami is a glutamate. It's not a monosodium glutamate. But our tongues have a reaction where it exemplifies flavor. It doesn't make things taste better. It makes your tongues more perceptive to tasting.
Mm-hmm. And the other question I had on the cupcakes, did she use the aged kimchi?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Just pureed that thing right down in the Vitamix, like, you know, 3 seconds, it's batter. It's right. Amazing.
That's awesome. And very inspirational.
Oh, absolutely. Another thing, get separate equipment. Get a separate chopping board.
Yeah, I mean, even just making kimchi, I like your tip about using gloves. I did not use gloves when I first made kimchi, and my hands were garlic, ginger, pepper for like 3 days. You know, I'd be I'm sipping my beer, being, what is it? This smells weird. Although it's my fingers.
Yeah. This ghostly kimchi thing. Whenever I have a beer, what's going
right,
on?
Exactly, the ghost of kimchi pale ale.
So let's talk about your book that you've been working on.
It is an interactive PDF. I bypass the app because, from what I've seen out there, that's not how anyone cooks. You want one page, you want a recipe, you want to get it short, you want to refer to something in the back to make crust. But I'm still finishing it off. The last chapter is, I don't know why I stopped and said I'm going back to do this. I'm working on a lot of gluten-free recipes. One is because I am working on a gluten-free project. I developed gluten-free empanadas called Yum Pies for Levine's General Store. That's a brand. They did well in testing. I actually have encountered a lot of people that I didn't realize had celiac.
Right.
And these are people that I know well. And you think they're being polite, like, no, you know, that's okay. I don't want a croissant. You know? And when you find out, like, wow, they've been, as adults, they've been dealing with it for 2 years. Like, all of a sudden the switch went off. We don't know why. You know, epigenetics are a huge theory as to why these things are all happening. Maybe it's why I'm now allergic to fish sauces and some shrimp. Mm-hmm. But, I did go back to rewrite it because I experimented a lot with different types of dough and different ways to incorporate it into baking, kimchi, that is.
To gluten-free dough.
Gluten-free dough.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, it's a little bit of science. It's not just like whipping out an egg and some flour. There's a lot of know-how.
Mm-hmm. So you're adding a gluten-free chapter at the end or incorporating throughout?
It's incorporated throughout. I'll put in an option to add gluten-free dough, GF dough, turn to page, you know.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
And when do you anticipate this being out, and how will people be able to get their hands on it?
Well, they will get it through kimchilicious.com.
Okay.
You know, it'll be sold as, a turnkey solution for downloading. I don't know, I keep saying it'll be out in 2 months. The problem is I work.
Yeah. Yes.
It's a labor of love.
It's a labor of love, and I don't want to put out something that I'm not proud of.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, particularly because it's my thing, you know.
Yeah.
So I want it to be something that people can use. They can select. I don't want the I've already subtracted all the difficult recipes. You know what I mean? There were some things where I'm going like, no one will ever make this phyllo dough dish in a million years, but it's delicious.
Yeah. And so I have to say, when you did your talk at the library, you had beautiful photography, all, you know,
this whole
slideshow, and I mean, I am very excited about your cookbook coming out because there was amazing. I actually took notes of some of the things that you had been working on besides the kimchi waffles. You did a kimchi shortbread.
Oh, yeah. Those were good. It's a basic shortbread recipe. This is where I have to figure out, are people going to – it's a chapter on dehydration.
Mm-hmm.
So it is using the powdered kimchi. There's no other way to get that. but it's a wonderful ingredient to add into shortbread. Mm-hmm. It works so well with butter. I mean, kimchi and anything with fat is delicious.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, so I haven't had it yet, but I know like Trader Joe's actually has a dried kimchi that they sell now.
It's like shoe leather.
Shoe leather. I know. That's what I guessed.
Yeah.
You can't dehydrate in your oven, though.
You can, but you know what? It takes on a different quality.
Right.
It actually, all the sugars start to burn. Okay. An oven never gets that low.
That low, that's true.
Even if you say it's at warm at 100 and something, it's higher. And I've had that where I go like, it's actually, I want to retain the color. I want to make sure the sugar doesn't caramelize and burn. But in the oven, I've had it look.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
But they do sell the stuff to make your own kimchi. It's good.
Yeah, you know, you could buy the kits that are out there. I always think if the kits are good for starters. You know, like my first kimchi, that's right. Not a bad thing because it's all there. It takes the worry out of it. But Chris, as you can see, you make it. There's not many special things you need.
Yeah, not at all.
And as I said with the lactoacid bacteria, people sell starters, and it does help. I got to say, in large batches, it helps to have some of the, you know, retaining some of the brine, the fermented brine from mm-hmm. a past batch that you like, and using that, like beer. If you like that batch, that's a good batch. Use mm-hmm. it. That helps in large batches. It does accelerate with control.
And if people are very nervous, if it's their first time, they haven't had much, experience fermenting vegetables, then by all means, I think a starter can't hurt. It won't hurt.
It can't hurt. But with, as you get more seasoned with it, again, it's available in the air.
Right.
But I do wonder from state to state how much is actually available depending on barometric pressure.
Right. I was just reading an article on in a microbiology journal about sourdough and how that changes. If you bring a sourdough, from Rome to New York or from San Francisco to New York, it will very much mutate in a period of time.
It's a different, it becomes a different product. Mm-hmm. That's the bottom line. Like they always say, and it's true, you talk with people from San Francisco, it's like, oh, that's not sourdough bread. This is sourdough. And they're right. They do have really good sourdough bread there.
They got good bugs in the air.
They do.
So thank you so much, Tony, for being
on. Yeah, Tony, the best.
Yeah, we will definitely keep talking. When your book comes out, we're definitely going to have it on. We'll put links to Tony's blog. I hope you guys were inspired to both, from a couple weeks ago, to both make kimchi and then also start cooking with it.
All right. So stay awesome, stay healthy, eat more kimchi.
Yes.
Foment about it.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening. So you got yourself a